Welcome to those who are here in person and to those who are here with us online as well. If those of us who are joining virtually can just take one extra second to mute yourselves just so that we don't have any background noise, that would be very helpful. So we're continuing in our study of Pirkei Avos. 2 weeks ago we learned the Mishnah from Hillel HaZaken, Im Ein Ani Li Mi Li U'Kesha Ani La'Atzmi Ma Ani. And that's what I'd like to finish off with today, is our final comments on that Mishnah and some very relevant messages that we can take away from it. There's a story told about a prominent Jew in Vilna who traveled to Belarus, to the city of Brisk, to visit the renowned Beis Halevi. Beis Halevi lived in the 1800s. He passed away in 1892. And he was known to be one of the greats of the generation. So this Jew from Vilna decided that he had to discuss with him many of the polemics, many of the issues that were going on in his community in Vilna. And he goes to discuss them with the Beis Halevi. After an extensive conversation, the Beis Halevi turns to him and he says, "You know, I have a request of you, and you're going to find it unusual, but I'm going to explain what I mean." And he says, "When you get back to Vilna, I would suggest that you spend a considerable amount of time with those in your hometown who are homeless. And any future questions or any disputes, any issues that come up in your community going forward, you should discuss with the members of your community who are homeless. And they will resolve all the issues for you." This man was obviously deeply confused by the unusual request of the Beis Halevi. What could he have possibly meant with these very mystifying words? Why would the homeless members of our community be able to give a perspective on the critical issues that are facing the whole town of Vilna? How could it be that they would have a nuanced perspective and really be able to help shape the answer or the guidance for the entire community? How can they give a balanced outlook on something that is so critical, on something that is omed berumo shalolam? And the Beis Halevi went on to explain to him what he meant. And he quoted the pasuk in Tehillim. If you look at number Aleph, the pasuk says, "Beis Aharon baruchu es Hashem, Beis Halevi baruchu es Hashem, Yirei Hashem baruchu es Hashem." And the Beis Halevi explained that a Kohen, as we know, is a member of the Beis Aaron. He's a member of Aaron HaKohen's family. A Levi by his birthright is a member of the Beis HaLevi. They are part of prestigious families, whether or not they did anything to achieve those lofty goals. There is nothing in them that requires preparation to be a part of those wonderful families. And that's what the pasuk says. Beis Aaron, you are born into the home, into the family of Aaron. It's a pre-existing condition. Beis HaLevi, you're part of the family of Levi, whether you like it or not, whether you do anything to deserve it or not. These people are born into that system by the nature of who their parents happen to be. However, when the pasuk describes somebody who has Yiras Shamayim, somebody who lives life being a God-fearing Jew, there is no description as being a member of the Beis Yirei Hashem. That does not exist, because obtaining Yiras Shamayim and being a committed Jew is something that only will come if a person is willing to exert effort and energy to develop and foster that relationship. It doesn't matter who one's parents may have been. That is not a ticket into the Beis Yirei Hashem. It doesn't work that way. You cannot be born into that system. And one needs to overcome many obstacles and impediments throughout life to make themselves into a person who is a Yarei Hashem, somebody who has their own relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And these were the homeless people, in quotes, that the Beis HaLevi was referring to. Go to those people, not who are born into the system, not the Kohanim, not the Leviim, but when you go back to your town and you have an issue in the future, go to those people who don't come from those homes. Go to a person who's homeless, who comes from the Yirei Hashem society, who are not born into a bias. Those people who developed their own homes on their own obstacles, with all the challenges that they overcame, with the relationship that they developed. And the Beis HaLevi said they are the ones who should be held in highest regard, because they don't rely on a pre-existing home. They struggled and they succeeded throughout life to become the great people who they are. Every day in Psuke de Zimra, we mention a pasuk from Az Yashir. Zeh keli va'anveyu elokei avi va'arom emenu. This is my God and I will ve'anveyu, and I will glorify Him, I will beautify Him. Elokei avi va'arom emenu. He's the God of my parents, the God of my father, and I will raise Him up. One of the preeminent students of the Baal Shem Tov was a great tzaddik by the name of Rab Meir Primashlana. And he suggests that in truth this pasuk is referring to two divergent groups of people. There are those, he writes, who spend their entire lives pursuing God, trying to understand Him, exploring and researching, and seeking out the Ribbono Shel Olam's divine presence in every part of their world and every part of their experience. And that is their lifelong mission as they travel throughout life to uncover and sometimes to discover what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's significance is to all of humanity. Such people reach a point in their lives when they can actually say, Zeh Keli, this is my God. God actually means something special and significant to me. I have a personal, a close and intimate relationship with Him. I have forged it over time. God actually is significant in the experiences of my life. That's Zeh Keli. And on such people we say, Va'anvehu, that is beautiful. That is a tremendous accomplishment that you've come to that understanding and to that recognition. That is a remarkable accomplishment as an individual in the world. But there are others, he writes, who spend so much of their lives boasting and overemphasizing the aspect of Elokei Avi. And I'm sure we've come across many such people. They speak about all the great memories from their parents, from their grandparents, all the stories, all the legends, about how wonderful they were. You know, I used to watch my Zaidi davening with such kavana, and I would see how he would put on his gartel. I watched how my mother or my grandmother used to stand there by the Shabbos candles crying that her children should be successful. I know that my grandfather used to go to the mikveh every day, and he was very makbid that on Pesach night he only ate the bitter horseradish, no lettuce, none of that. And he wouldn't dare eat gebraks because that was totally off limits. And he certainly didn't carry in the local Eruv. And I remember my grandmother only served Yashan and Chalav Yisrael and Pas Yisrael in the house and would never cut corners with anything. And you often hear these stories about people reminding themselves of those great experiences that they have memories of from previous generations, of how their grandparents, how their parents may have forged the relationship of Elokei Avi. And they're very proud of it, and they should be proud. But he says so often, that experience ends by Elokei Avi. People don't take the time to translate all of those memorable minhagim, all of those legends, to understand what they actually mean to me in my life. So yes, that's what my grandparents may have done, and they were legends. But one needs to ask themselves the next question, which is, that was Elokei Avi. But what does Zeh Keli mean to me? What does the Ribbono Shel Olam represent in my own life? The Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin tells us that when a melech, when a king comes to power, upon accepting his leadership, so we're told that he has to write a personal Sefer Torah. And the Torah says, V'karabo kol yamei chayav. He has to travel around with this Sefer Torah anytime he goes on any mission, anytime he leaves his castle, anytime he goes on any kind of service for his people. He needs to bring the Sefer Torah along with him. It's a portable Sefer Torah. And he has to read from it every day. V'karabo kol yamei chayav, some suggest it means he will also have an insight into all of the experiences of his life. That Sefer Torah is meant to guide him through all the challenges that he will face as the leader of the Jewish people. But then the Gemara says an interesting story. What happens when you have a melech who passes away and his child takes over? Must the child commission the writing of a Sefer Torah on his own? Or can he just take the one that was left for him by his parent? And the Gemara says no. Afal pi shehinichu lo aviv Sefer Torah, even if one's parent left over a Sefer Torah, mitzvah lo sheyichtov mishalo. He has an obligation to write and to fashion his own Sefer Torah. He cannot rely on the one that was left over to him by his parents. And this is not only an obligation of a melech, this is for all simple subjects of the Jewish community as well. Let's look at the Rambam together in number Gimel, when the Rambam says, Mitzvah saseh al kol ish v'ish mi Yisrael lichtov Sefer Torah la'atzmo. We have an obligation to write a Sefer Torah. It's the last mitzvah in the Torah. Ba'ata kisvu lachem es hashira hazos. Kelomar, Kisvu lachem Torah sheyesh ba shira zu. You have to write a Sefer Torah that has all of the beautiful songs in it. Lefi she'ein kosven as haTorah parshios parshios. But now the Rambam says the most important line, va'af al pi shehi nichula avosav Sefer Torah mitzvah lichtov mishalo. What if my parents commissioned the writing of a Sefer Torah, and now they left it over for me to have as part of their legacy? The Gemara says that is insufficient. And the Rambam quotes it lahalacha that each of us have an individual obligation to write our own Sefer Torah and not to rely on that which was written or commissioned by our parents. My father told me on many occasions that perhaps this Gemara is instructive not only in the strict letter of the law, but in general in life, and that is that we all have a personal obligation throughout life to whittle out and to fashion our own Sefer Torah experience. Not only to say that Sefer Torah meant something to my parents, to my grandparents, that the Ribono Shel Olam who was represented in the Sefer Torah meant something to them. That's not enough. But to go throughout life and understand that Af al pi shehinichu lo aviv Sefer Torah, yes, I have so many memorable things that I can think of when I remind myself of my grandparents, of previous generations. But that's not sufficient. I have to always translate that and say, mitzvah lo sheyichtov mishalo. I need to make sure that I spend time throughout life writing my own experience of Sefer Torah, creating my own relationship with what that Sefer Torah means to me. And you'll notice every day when we start off the Shemona Esrei, we invoke the memory of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, which makes a lot of sense. Why wouldn't we want the schus of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? It's not a coincidence that when we introduce Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we refer to them as Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, ve'Elokei Yaakov. Why don't we streamline that sentence and say Elokei Avram, Yitzchak, ve'Yaakov? You are the God of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why do we say an extra word, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, ve'Elokei Yaakov? And the answer is because each of the Avos felt unfulfilled and unsatisfied just being the child or grandchild of a towering personality. It's not good enough that I'm the child of Avram Avinu. I need to search out and find meaning in my own relationship with God and make it one of Elokei Yitzchak. God is going to mean something to me, not only what He meant to my father, and Yaakov felt the same way. His spiritual life was not going to be defined by the way that his father interacted with God, by the way that his grandfather interacted with him. He was going to make meaning of it for his own life. And that is why in Shemona Esrei we refer to them separately, because the God and the experience, the spiritual experience of Avram Avinu was not the same as that of Yitzchak, and that was not the same as the experience as Yaakov had either. On the last days of Pesach, we read Shir HaShirim. And many of us are familiar with the Psukim in Shir HaShirim. Some have the custom to say it on Erev Shabbos as well. And in Shir HaShirim, we speak about a very vivid description of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of how He connects to the Jewish people. And one of the illustrations that's given in the Psukim is, Kitapuach ba'atzei hayar, kein dodi bein habanos. Now here's just an interesting thought to be aware of. I don't have a watch today. Does anyone have that I can borrow? I'm sorry. Kitapuach ba'atzei hayar. How do you translate the word tapuach? Ah, mother-in-law is always to the rescue. Thank you. How do you translate kitapuach? If I would ask anyone, what is a tapuach? What would you say? No, I'm just asking for a simple definition. What is tapuach? Tapuach is an apple, right? We're all familiar with that. Mistake. Tapuach in Biblical Hebrew does not mean an apple. Tapuach in Biblical Hebrew is a reference to a citrus fruit. It's a reference to an esrog, which might be surprising to many of us, but in Biblical Hebrew, that is what it means, and that's quite clear from the way it is explained. So what does it mean here when we have a description of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being one of a citrus fruit, as being one of an esrog? Ketapuach ba'atzei hayar. The same way you have an esrog that grows out in the forest, in the field, kein dodi bein habanim, so too are my children, the Jewish people. are likened to an esrog, a beautiful citrus fruit that hangs from a tree. Many interpretations are suggested, but Rabbi Elia Lapian, one of the great mashgichim, writes that an esrog is comprised of two critical components. An esrog has an uketz, which is the root or the stem, and on the other side of it, the esrog also has a pitum, which is the blossom, that is the flower of the fruit. And every good Jew, says Rabbi Elia Lapian, is expected to cultivate both of those critical characteristics throughout life as well, to make sure that they have a strong foundation, a firm anchor in the Mesorah, in Elokei Avi, to make sure that I have an uketz that connects me, a foundation and a root, a stem, that brings me back to all of those important memories, to all of those important experiences of my parents, of my grandparents, of all previous generations of Jews who came before us. While at the same time, writes Rabbi Elia Lapian, we also are expected to have a pitum, which is to cultivate, to refine, and to develop our own fruit, to make it something meaningful. In fact, the Gemara tells us that an esrog is a fruit that is very unusual, because it stays on its tree, hadar be'ilano mishana l'shana. Most fruits are not able to stay on a tree for an entire year. They'll spoil, they'll rot. But an esrog, the Gemara says, is dar be'ilano mishana l'shana. It is able to live from one year to the next, attached to its roots, because roots are very, very important. But if it is there for too long, it will fall off. If it doesn't learn at some point to develop on its own, to create its own identity, to make its own experience of its own life, it will fall off the tree and never be connected again. Not only that, it will never become anything on its own either. And therefore, Rabbi Elia Lapian writes that it's important that we all have both of those experiences, the experience of the pitum, the experience of the ukatz, and the reason for that is kitapuach ba'atzei hayar. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves the Jewish people because they are always refining and developing both of those aspects at the same time. They're always firmly rooted in tradition, looking back to what the Mesorah means, but also making sure at the same time that they develop on their own to make a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's meaningful. My grandfather, my father's father, used to often tell us a story. His name was Rabbi Melech Schechter. He was an amazing person and a very distinguished person in his own right. And he used to tell us the story about my father's bar mitzvah. And he said that he lived in the Bronx. He was a rabbi in the Bronx at the time. And he had no money to have a lavish celebration for my father's bar mitzvah. So he made a kiddush after davening in shul in the shtiebel. That's what everybody did at the time. And he said that there was a local conservative rabbi who happened to know him from the many years of being in the same community. And he saw there was a crowd of people outside of the shul one Shabbos morning, and he asked them what was happening. So they told him that Rabbi Melech Schechter is making a bar mitzvah for his son Herschel. They're making a kiddush now. So the conservative rabbi said, "Oh, I know him, I like him. I'm going to go say mazel tov, let me go inside." So the conservative rabbi comes in, and he wishes mazel tov to my grandfather, and he says, "You know, I didn't really know that you were making a bar mitzvah, but outside people told me that Rabbi Melech Schechter is making a bar mitzvah for his son Herschel, so I came in, and I just want to give you a blessing. And that is, I hope that your son will not be known in his life as Rabbi Melech Schechter's son. I hope you will be known as Rabbi Herschel Schechter's father." That's the blessing that he gave my grandfather at my father's bar mitzvah. My grandfather used to tell us how he was a very prominent rabbi on his own. He was the head of Gittin and Gittin for the whole New York area. He used to take care of many of those services, and he was very well known on his own. He was a Rosh Hashiva and a very accomplished Talmud Chacham, and he said it was not long before he was completely forgotten, and nobody referred to him anymore as himself. But he said his greatest pride and joy in life was when he began to be known as Rabbi Herschel Schechter's father. And he said, there's no greater joy that a parent can have than that. And he used to say it over at all of our family simchas, that he hoped the day would come when they wouldn't talk about him anymore, when they wouldn't talk about his son, when they would come to a time when they would talk about his grandchildren, and when he could go around bragging that he was the grandfather of his grandchildren. That was the beautiful bracha that my grandfather used to tell us. And I later found such an insightful interpretation. Many have the custom on Friday night to bless their children, Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chimenashe. And it's a little bit strange when you think about it. There are so many great personalities throughout Tanakh. If I would ask you to pick two people whom we want our children to be like, who we want them to emulate, I think very low on the list would have been Ephraim and Menashe. Think about all the great people. I would have said, I want my children to be like Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Pinchas. Lots of great people. Lots of Nevi'im, Yehoshua ben Nun, Kaleb ben Yefune. A lot of choices. But we don't. B'cha Yivarech Yisrael, the blessing that we give our children for all eternity is, you should be like Ephraim and Menashe. What is unique, what is special about Ephraim and Menashe? Why do we want them to be the paradigms for our children to look up to emulate? What is unique about their experience in life? And I once saw, I forgot where, but perhaps what is unique about Ephraim and Menashe is the fact that they grew up as being B'nai HaShvatim. Ephraim and Menashe were part of a very elite group of human beings, a very elite group of Jews. All of the Shvatim were who they were surrounded with. And they fought throughout life and they said, we will not remain as just being the children of Shvatim. We want to be great ourselves. We want to become Shvatim on our own. And in the end, they were successful. Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Vayechi says, Ephraim u'Menashe kiru'uvein v'shimon yiyuli. Ephraim and Menashe were elevated to no longer be part of the grandchildren's generation. You know, you sometimes go to a simcha, and it's interesting how they split up the tables. At what age do you switch from being like at the children's, grandchildren's table, to then go, right, anybody know what I'm talking about, to then go to be part of the adult table? When does that happen? It's an interesting question. Ephraim and Menashe said, we're not going to sit at the grandchildren's table for the rest of our lives. Yes, it's true, our father is Yosef, he was a great Jew, he was a great man, but that is not sufficient. We want to be Shvatim on our own. And we will do everything in our power to develop ourselves to become just that. Irrespective of who our parents are. And that is what they did. It's the greatest blessing we can give our children. Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chimenashe. God should give you the strength and the wisdom and the courage to grow up like Ephraim and Menashe, who were not afraid of reaching great heights, who were not afraid to accomplish great things, who did everything in their life experience to become great on their own, even though they could have simply relied on having a great parent or grandparent or great-grandparent. They said that will not be enough because we know there's more for us to do. So when I was thinking about this Mishnah, perhaps what it means to us is, Im ein ani li, mi li. If I don't believe that the experiences of my life can be something meaningful, can be something where I can forge a relationship on my own and make it something special, make it something holy and sacred, then who will ever give me that opportunity? I can live my entire life just telling stories and living in the shadow of another great person. I've been asked many times, what is it like being your father's son? My mother's troubled why nobody ever asked what it's like being her son. It's actually a better question. But I've many times been asked what it's like. And I was very taken by an article I once read by Rabbi Yoel Schoenfeld, who was working for many years under his father in Queens, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. And they asked him, what is it like to live in your father's shadow your whole life? You know, he was in his 50s already and he was still the assistant to his father. So he said, I don't believe that I live in my father's shadow. I believe that I live in my father's light. And I thought that was a beautiful perspective. And I think it's very correct. There's two different ways to look at it. You can look at it as just being overpowered, as being in the shadow, as having no opportunity, or living in that light and doing something special with the light that you've been given and carrying forward to others. Im ein ani li, if I don't seize that opportunity and make the experience of life meaningful for myself, nobody else will. And the only one who's going to lose in the end is me. That's the first lesson of our Mishnah. But then the Mishnah continues. Kesha'ani la'atzmi, ma'ani. If I believe that all of life is just about being self-centered, if all of life is just about my own experience, and I don't incorporate with that the experience of my parents and what that means to me and us as a people and as a family, then that's also a very shallow existence. So let's look at the psukim in number hey. V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov. When the Ribbono shel Olam and God tells us about all the curses about the tochacha, and it's a painful story to read, but then the Torah says, V'zacharti, with all the devastation, with all the destruction, I will remember the covenant that I made with Yaakov, with Yitzchak, v'af es brisi Avram es kar, v'ha'aretz es kar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that He will remember our zchus avos. Once again, the Torah there writes a second time, V'zacharti lehem bris rishonim asher hotzeisi osam me'eretz Mitzrayim le'enei hagoyim. I will remember the bris, the covenant, the treaty that I made with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, with the Rishonim, with the elders, with the founders of this nation. And I will take them out and I will save them. Zechus Avos is something that is a very important part of our tradition. So the Medrash writes a somewhat frightening comment, where the Medrash says, Ad emosai zchus avos kayemes. Number Zion. You know, Avraham Avinu lived a very long time ago. And we still get up every year on Rosh Hashanah and we say, God, please save us, because we once had somebody whose name was Avraham Avinu and he had a son by the name of Yitzchak and he went ahead with the Akedah. How long can that last? How many times can you use the same story over and over again? Is that just going to live on forever? You know, somebody does something good and they feel they deserve a reward. So they go to the CEO of a company, they made a great deal, and they say, I'd like a bonus. Okay, you're deserving of a bonus. You get it. After it's given, how many times can they come back and say, you know, I deserve a bonus again for that which I've done a year ago, or 2 years ago, or 5 years ago, 10 years ago? It's time to move on. How long can that great favor last? How long can one go back to the bank for that wonderful activity of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? And the Medrash asks, Aremasai zchus avos kayemes. Yes, zchus avos is something that we take very seriously, but how long can it go on? And the Medrash gives a whole bunch of opinions, to which the Medrash then writes, there's an opinion that if you look here, Rabbi Yudan ben Chanan b'shem Rabbi Brachi Amar, Imra Isa zchus avos shemata, just parenthetically, it's such a beautiful line of the Medrash. If you feel you live at a time when there's no longer zchus avos, when you can't rely on it, when life seems to be so complicated. So there's an answer, and that is Leich Hidavik B'Gemilas Chasadim. More powerful than Zchus Avos is being involved in Gemilas Chasadim. So parenthetically, that's a beautiful comment. But anyway, the bottom line of the Medrash is Amar Avacha. Lo'olam Zchus Avos Kayemes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us Zchus Avos will live on forever. And this is what we say, Ki kel rachum Hashem alokecha, lo yarpecha, velo yashchisecha, God will never destroy you, velo yishkach, es bris avosecha. The zchus avos is eternal. Zchus avos is everlasting. What they invested in all of us is something that is here with us forever. What's very intriguing is, if you look at the very beginning of Shmona Esrei, the Torah comments in Hilchos Tefillah, we say every day in the davening, V'zocher chasdei avos. God remembers all of the great things that our ancestors were involved in. And the next line is, Umei vigor livnei v'nehem. And He brings salvation to the children. So the Torah says, what is this sentence? What is this line? What does it mean? Are they connected? Explains the Torah, V'zocher chasdei avos u'mevi gor levnei v'neim, tiknu lahazkir chasdei avos etzel ha-geula. Why do we mention our forefathers when we talk about a geula? Lomar, it is to teach all of us. She'af imtamaz chusavos. Geulaso la'olam kayemes. Even if you believe that we can't rely on Avram Avinu anymore, how many generations can rely on that? How many times can we go back to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Will we ever be redeemed? Are we worthy on our own? The Medrash says, don't worry. Because either way, mevi geula levnei v'neihem, God is going to redeem us as He promised. Shehareh hivtiach ba b'shmo ha'gadol leman shemo be'ahava. So it's a beautiful commentary of what it means in the Shemona Esrei. On the one hand, we say v'zocher chaz de'avos, we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remember our schus avos. But then we say, we know that we're unworthy. So maybe do it because we had parents. Maybe gar levnei v'neihem. But what if that gets used up? God says, leman shemo be'ahava. I'll do it anyway. Because I made a promise with my own name. God will never defile His own name. And therefore the assumption is that by hook or by crook, however it is, we will experience a geula at some point. So somebody once asked me, schus avos is a nice concept, but I'm a convert. I was very taken by this question. I was giving a shiur somewhere, and I was talking about schus avos, and there was a woman who was very uncomfortable, and she burst out crying after the shiur and said, you know, it's a very beautiful idea, but what's left for people like me? What's going to be with my experience of life? And it compelled me to look into it, because I thought it was a really important question. What does a ger do? They don't have schus avos. They don't have Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And I later found that the Medrash addresses this point in a different place. Yegia kapecha ki sochel. The Pasuk says that the work of your hands you will eat. Writes the Medrash, Zeha ger she'ein lo schus avos. You're right, there are some people in the world who may not have schus avos. So should they live life being afraid? Ukedei shelo yomar. In order that they shouldn't say, Oili she'ein li schus avos. I'm nervous that I don't have this great lineage, that I don't have all these great things to stand for me. The Torah then says, Yigia kapecha ki sochel. B'schus atzmo yocha ba'olam hazeh ba'olam haba. One who works hard in their own life is able to accomplish so much more and should never be afraid. But it's a life of mission, it's a life of purpose. One of the Medrash then continues, I don't know if it's on here. Yeah, the Medrash then continues, Chaviva hi ha-melacha yoser mischus avos. If one works hard to develop something special in their own life, that's greater, that's more powerful than schus avos. So a ger has no reason to be concerned. That's what the Medrash tells us. Perhaps this is the second phrase in our Mishnah. Imein ani li mi li, if I don't take advantage, if I don't seize opportunity for myself, nobody else will. But kesha anilats me, when I look at my life in a vacuum, and I don't appreciate all that came before me, I don't understand how powerful the schus avos is in my existence, in my experience. Ma ani. This religion did not start with me. It's humbling to be reminded of the fact that we hold on to a sacred trust that has been here for so long. That we hold on to the minhagim, that we hold on to our Torah, that we hold on to the mitzvos. And they have not dissipated, they have not been destroyed, because we have held to our job. That's a humbling thought. Ksha'ani la'atzmi, if I believe that this religion, that this experience is one that began with me, ma'ani, what kind of life is that going to be? And that's why we need both of these together. There's an additional point, and with this we're going to close in a few minutes. There's an additional point made in the Avos de Rab Nasan. Avos de Rab Nasan often expands on the Mishnah as we find it in Pirkei Avos. So here the Avos de Rab Nasan writes a very interesting comment. Imein ani li mi li, let's learn it together on the bottom of the page, number Yud. Imein ani li mi li, writes the Avos de Rab Nasan, im lo zachisi ani la'atzmi ba'olam hazeh. Let's say I spent my life and I was unable to accumulate, to accrue good deeds and to be involved in wonderful things. Mi yizkeli l'chai ha'olam haba, do I have any chance in the world to come? What's going to be if I lived an empty life? Writes the Avos to Rav Nasan, Abba ein li. You know, sometimes in life we can fall back on our parents. Not always. You have an issue at work, it's not your parents' profession. They can't always help you. It's not always something that we can rely on. Well, when we get to Olam Haba, and God is going to have conversations with us, what are we going to say? Call my father in? What is your father relevant to this discussion? Abba Ainli, Ima Ainli. At a time like that, writes the Elister Rav Nasan, a mother won't be too helpful either. Ach Ainli, my brothers, my sisters, I can't call upon them then. Avram Avinu Einu Yachol Lifto, says Yishmael, look no further than Avram Avinu, who was unable to extricate his own son, Yishmael. Yitzchak Einu Yachol Lifto, says Esav. Esav lived a life, he made decisions, he made choices on his own. Yitzchak couldn't help that. Afilum Nosnim Hemes Mamonam, I can give all the money in the world. God is Lo Yikach Shochad. God doesn't take a bribe. So what is it all going to help? Now the Mishnah writes in Maseches Sanhedrin, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek LeOlam Haba. Every Jew has a place in the world to come, and that's a very famous line, but what most people don't know is, except for the following people. The Mishnah then continues and says, not everybody has a place in Olam Haba. Most people have a Chelek in Olam Haba. And it goes on to list a bunch of very well-known Rishayim, many well-known people who made very poor choices in their lives, who unfortunately will not have a place in the world to come. That's what the Gemara says there. But then the Gemara writes in Maseches Sanhedrin that there were a number of individuals who were not listed in that list of people who won't go to Olam Haba, and yet the world knew that they were terrible people. So how come they weren't listed? And the Gemara says, well, they had wonderful children who fixed it up for them. So how does this work? How does it work? We're all familiar that after somebody passes away, family members say Kaddish. Kaddish is supposed to be said by children. The reason why is because we have an assumption that if a child does something good, it will help their parent, even though the parent is no longer in the world. But it's able to help. Parenthetically, there are many who have asked the following shaila. Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg actually sent it to me 2 weeks ago, but many have asked it over the last few months, and it's the same question. You know, Kaddish is something that, as children, we take very seriously for our parents. Unfortunately, there were a few months where people didn't say Kaddish, because there was no shul, there were no minyanim. And they want to know, should they extend now for all that missed time, for all those 2 or 3 months, however long it was, that we didn't have an opportunity to recite Kaddish, should they now extend further or not? So this is an interesting question. It's nothing to do with our shir, but it's an interesting point regardless. Why is it that we only say Kaddish for a parent for 11 months? Anybody know? Right, we have a yahrzeit at 12 months. So why do we say Kaddish only up to 11 months? Meaning to wean off the Avel?
Yeah,
just
to not have Kaddish
until they go back. So it's a nice idea. It's a nice idea, but it's not exactly the reason why we stop after 11 months. The reason why is because there's an assumption that even the worst, most horrible Russia in the world, as horrible as their life choices may have been, will never suffer more than 12 months in the world to come. That's the assumption. The Gemara says nobody can ever suffer more than 12 months. Now, that might be a horrible 12 months, but the worst person in the world will never suffer more than 12 months. So, while our parents might potentially be suffering, we want to say Kaddish for them to help them out. It gives them an Ilui HaNeshama. So it lightens the load in the Olam HaEmes for them. But what kind of way is that to say about my parent that I believe that my parent is so awful that they're still suffering 12 months later? That's a very disrespectful comment to say about our parents. It's a disrespectful perspective for us to have. So we stop at 11 months because we say, as many things as our parents may have done wrong, there's no way they're still suffering for the 12-month period. That's the maximum. There's no way they're that bad. There's no way that God could punish them for that long. So out of respect to our parents, we stop after 11 months. So somebody once asked, I love my parents so much, I want to stay at the 12-month. I said, if you love your parents so much, you'll understand what this is about, and you would stop after 11 months. Because if you love them and respect them and think about the lives that they lived, you would understand that it's inappropriate to add on to the Kaddish. So many have asked now, should they say Kaddish for the times that they missed? And it's an interesting question, but the answer is no. You don't extend further, because the assumption is whether you said Kaddish or you didn't say Kaddish, they're not going to be suffering longer than potentially that 12-month period of time. So there's no reason to extend. As difficult and unfortunate as it is that many have not had the opportunity to say Kaddish, that is the reality that we live with. But what's fascinating is in the Rishonim, the Maharam Chalava was one of the major Rishonim in the 14th century. He lived in the mid-1300s. And the Maharam Chalava writes that there was a major debate in his day. Does Kaddish really do anything? How could it be? After somebody passes away, the assumption is that life is over. Everything stops there. So what does it help for somebody to go after they already passed away and now they're going to recite Kaddish? What does Kaddish help? Whatever I was able to accomplish in life is done. Whatever I didn't do is not going to happen. So how is it that Kaddish is going to be helpful at all? Let's read a little bit, because I find this shocking, right? We're so used to this concept of Kaddish, but it's not so simple. And in the 14th century, they were debating this issue, whether or not there was any purpose to the Kaddish that is recited when somebody passes away. Ein safek, he writes, ki lo yoel v'lo yatzel ma'ashayasu b'shvil adam acharei moso. What does it help to do something after a person passes away? So I give tzedakah in memory of my parents, or I go and I say Kaddish in their memory. What does it help? The parents live life. They did whatever they did. They didn't do whatever they didn't do. That's it. So the Maharam Chalava says, I don't understand this. Ki adam nidon lefi mashehu be'es moso. A person is judged based on whatever they finished, whatever they accomplished at the time when they were taken. Ein tosefes umala v'toelas b'mashayasu acharei kein. Doesn't help what somebody is going to do afterward. And he goes on and on to discuss this, and therefore he writes the last line. V'lachein. Oh, I cut it off too early, I'm sorry. V'lachein. Tzar sheishdadel adam lasos ha-mitzvahs b'zman ha-katzer. He says, this should inspire us to do whatever we can while we're still here, while we have opportunity. Now, obviously, this is not the accepted opinion. Obviously, we know that his contemporaries are the ones who have been accepted. And we know that Kaddish is something that all children do. We know that Kaddish is something that is a great schus for parents. And we assume that it does give an Eloi HaNeshama. There is actually a further discussion. Let's say a child is unable to say Kaddish. You need a minion to say Kaddish. Not everybody lives in a place where there is a minion. Some people are, you know, they go to work during the day and they're unable to find a minion wherever it might be, whatever the circumstance. So what does a child do in a case like that? So there's a major debate whether or not they're able to hire somebody else to say Kaddish on their behalf. Well, maybe if a child does something in memory of their parent, that could help. But what does it help if an outsider does it? These are all major discussions. The Magen Avraham, who is the foremost commentary on Shulchan Aruch, writes in the 1600s, that we all know that it's been accepted practice that if a child can't say Kaddish, they get somebody else to say Kaddish. And that also is considered to be a great schus and an Eloi HaNeshama for that person. I find this fascinating because most of us just take it for granted that Kaddish works. But here, the Avos Rav Nosson is telling us as follows. Im ein ani li mili, if I don't take advantage of the opportunity that I have in life itself, don't assume that someone's going to come later and clean up the act for you. Yes, we have a special discussion about Kaddish. Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't help. Maybe children can hire someone, maybe they can't. But the Avos Rav Nosson tells us that's what this Mishnah means. Take advantage of life while you have it. Take advantage of the opportunity to invest in the world and to make it a better place while you have the opportunity to do that on your own. Because somebody else trying to do it for you later is never as potent, it's never as powerful. The greatest thing we could do for ourselves is to realize, im ein ani li mili, if I don't take advantage of every opportunity that is thrown my way, then I'm missing out on the potential, on the experience of life. And the Chafetz Chaim talks about this as well, a number of Yud Beis, and with this we're going to close, where the Chafetz Chaim says, Im ki bara mizaka abba. Although it's true that we have a concept that children are able to help out their parents even after the parents are no longer living, because even though that is true, Still, writes the Chafetz Chaim, Yishtadel kol adam l'saken ba'atzma b'chol asher timtza yado. One should take advantage of the opportunity to rouse and inspire themselves. Bein b'inyane limen ha-Torah, bein b'maisa tzedakah v'chesed. How many times I've heard people say, yeah, I didn't really have a chance to learn. You know, my children, maybe my grandchildren, you know, my grandson's in this yeshiva, my granddaughter's going to this seminary, and they're all proud of it. But we all have an obligation to learn Torah. We all have an obligation to get to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to get to understand Him, to be in a relationship with Him. Al yismach atzma banav shehem yizku oso. Don't live life and say, I rely on my children or grandchildren to clean it up for me later on and do whatever I missed out on. Shehem yashlimu achara b'ma'asehem. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, this is really the message. This is really the message of Hillel HaZaken in our Mishnah, where he suggests, who is greater than Hillel himself? I'm sure Hillel had great children who followed in his ways. And yet Hillel himself stands up and declares, "Ein ani li mili. I will not rely on my children. I'm going to make life meaningful for myself. And even though I know that I have great kids, even though I know my children can do great things after I'm no longer here, but I want to take advantage of every opportunity that I'm given." And that, writes the Chafetz Chaim, is really the message of what Hillel is trying to convey when he says, "Ein ani li mili." It's always that balance of, on the one hand, understanding our own obligation, our own opportunities, understanding that there's a Zeh Keli, at the same time appreciating the fact that there's an Elokei Avi, that we come from somewhere, that we are connected to something. She'ani la'atzmi ma'ani. But im lo achshavei masai, to always take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of us today. Not to look too far into the future, not to look too far into the past, but to understand and appreciate that every moment of life is a gift. Every moment of life is an opportunity. And here is our chance to take advantage of all of those experiences, of all of those opportunities, and to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a real way throughout the experiences of our own lives. So, Amir Tashem, next week we will continue.